Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. As we continue to celebrate the centennial anniversary of the ratification of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote, today we talk about radical suffragist Matilda Joslyn Gage. Gage was very involved in the national movement and has a South Dakota connection as well. Joining us today with more, we have author Angelica Shirley Carpenter, and her book, Born Criminal, goes into more details about Gage. Welcome back. Thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I think the last time we were together, we shared a stage at the South Dakota Festival of Books.
That's right. In person.
And this book, Born Criminal, is still tucked into my Keep at All Costs bookshelf.
Thank you.
So I highly recommend
it.
But
pretty soon.
Wonderful. Good to know.
Yeah.
Let's start with the title, Born Criminal, because you begin the book, and this is going to get to the bigger idea of who Gage was, but why did you call it Born Criminal for folks who haven't had a chance to read the book yet?
Well, it's because she got arrested at basically one night. She was home. She was an elderly person at home alone in Fayetteville, New York, and a deputy sheriff knocked on her door. And he had come to arrest her. And she said that all the crimes of which I was not guilty rushed through my mind, but I failed to remember that I was a born criminal, a woman. So her crime was registering to vote, and she was tried and found guilty. And she appealed, and she lost the appeal, too. So, you know, just by being a woman, she was born a criminal.
As we go throughout this year here on SDPB as part of this ongoing project, one of the things that has really hit home for me is that I think that we have a sense that women voting was inevitable. Because it just today in 2020, can you imagine? You know, it doesn't make any sense that it would be anything other. But when we look at the behavior and the actions and the sacrifice that so many of these women made, it wasn't inevitable. And they did some dramatic acts of self-sacrifice to get the issue, to move this issue forward in the American consciousness. Tell us
they
a did. Little bit
when
about...
When they started out, they had to carry two petitions with them. And people would sign the first one readily, giving women more rights. But the second one, to give women the right to vote, was so controversial that they kept it separate, and many people would not sign that one. But as time went on, I mean, she was in the movement for 50 years. I think by the time she died, people did think it was inevitable. You know, and then as you got into the 20th century, various presidents, like I think Grover Cleveland, knew it was coming, but they didn't want it to happen on their watch.
Why not?
Well, they were opposed to it. I mean, but like Woodrow Wilson, he didn't want it to happen on his watch, and it did eventually. I don't know. They thought women didn't really need to vote, but I think, you know, it just gained such momentum starting in 1848 in Seneca Falls that by the time it really happened, you know, 70 years later, it was unstoppable.
Yeah. Tell us why we don't know Matilda Gage's name in the same way that we know so many of these other, you know, Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. She's right on the front lines.
Well, she worked very closely with the two of them, and they were sometimes called a triumvirate, but they had a falling out late in life. Matilda was more radical than the other two, although Stanton was plenty radical, too. But Susan B. Anthony, you know, after 40 years of getting nowhere, was ready to cut deals with groups like the Women's Christian Temperance Union. And not that she necessarily agreed with their really right-wing ideas, like to put God in the Constitution and Jesus in the public schools, but she just wanted their membership of 200,000 to support her move for Votes for Women. Matilda would never have compromised with a group like that, never. She thought people had inherent rights, and it was her duty to teach the world about that, but she would never have compromised. So they pretty much had a falling out over religion, And then I also think Susan B. Anthony very much liked being the star of the women's movement. So even when Matilda was alive, she did things to kind of undermine her. Sometimes she took credit for Matilda's writing. Sometimes even when Matilda was right there on the stage, she didn't introduce her as part of a team that was working on the history of women's suffrage. And then after she died, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, well, she was working on this as Matilda was dying, published an autobiography pretty much leaving Matilda out, even though she and Matilda had been partners in writing for the movement. And Susan B. Anthony didn't write herself, but she had her own biographer who lived in her house and wrote her biography under Anthony's supervision. Also belittle Matilda's role, although Anthony gave her more credit than Stanton did in those two books. So eventually their stories became the accepted stories, and Matilda did not write an autobiography, and nobody wrote a book about her until the 70s, I would say. It was like the second round of the women's movement. People woke up to it, that there were some other women involved besides just Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. So since then, Matilda has been gaining in her people knowing her.
Yeah. Talk about, you said she was radical, and talk a little bit about some of her thoughts about marriage law, for example, because it wasn't just about, you know, voting. It was about, you know, how women live with dignity in the world.
Exactly. And that was another maybe cause for them to split their, you know, go their separate ways. Matilda thought it was important to fight for all kinds of equal rights, not just the right to vote. What Susan B. Anthony was ready to let some of the other ones slide, you know, in order to get the right to vote first. Matilda, though, by being radical, I mean she believed in equality for everybody. We're talking about all races, immigrants, even the ones who didn't speak English, people who weren't well educated. She never forgot about working women, and the women's movement was pretty middle class when she was in it, but she always thought working women needed places to live and access to jobs and education. She always thought prostitution was an economic problem rather than, you know, a moral problem. And she just never compromised. She was, you know, she was the most radical of them all. But Stanton was as radical as she was in terms of, they both believed that religion, organized religion, had really repressed women. And then as society had become less religious, governments had continued that oppression. They both believed that. But when Anthony and Matilda split, Elizabeth Cady Stanton stuck with Anthony, and that really hurt Matilda's feelings. Still, Anthony came to visit Matilda on her deathbed. I think of them as kind of like sisters. I don't know if you have a sister, but you know, when I was young, I used to fight with my sister in makeup. They were almost like that. They were so close. And Anthony must have cared about her to come and visit her on her deathbed. But Matilda tried at that point to give Anthony a copy of her most radical book, which was Woman, Church, and State. And Anthony refused to take it. So they were still fighting even on Matilda's deathbed.
Oh, my. What are the lessons for us today from her? Because the other thing, as we do this, you know, women's suffrage conversation series throughout the summer, that I keep asking myself that question, which is, what would these women be talking about today? What are their messages when you look back into the historical record that still matter today? What lessons do we learn from them? Somewhere in that area of a group of questions in a cluster, what sticks out to you?
If Matilda were alive today, she would just be outraged that women still don't make the same amount of money as men for the same job, that they still don't control their own bodies. And that's in the United States. You know, then you look at women in other countries who are killed for wanting the most basic rights like freedom of movement or learning to read. So her work is not done. And what we could learn from her, I think, she was a superb organizer. She really understood. She set up the organization for the New York State Women's Suffrage Association and made it a model for other states to use. So that's a concept people could use today. I lost my train of thought there. She believed in civil disobedience, which we're certainly seeing today.
It'd be interesting. Yeah, interesting to if these women, these voices were still writing today, what they would have to say about things.
When
so much has been gained,
I think Matilda would still be radical today.
Yeah. Interesting. Angelica Shirley Carpenter is the author of the book. It's called Born Criminal, Matilda Jocelyn Gage, Radical Suffragist, and that book is coming out in paperback soon, right?
And I have a new book about Matilda coming out called The Voice of Liberty. This is a picture book for kids. It's about how she and some of her friends from the New York Women's Suffrage Association staged a demonstration in 1886 at the dedication of the Statue of Liberty because they didn't think it was right for Liberty to be a woman in the United States where women had no liberty.
And I should, we only
so
have about 30 seconds.
September, The Voice of Liberty.
We only have about 30 seconds left, but I should say there is a South Dakota connection here. Tell us a little bit about her connection to L. Frank Baum.
Yes. People got Western fever during her lifetime, and times got harder in New York State where she lived. And one by one, her four adult children all moved to Dakota Territory. So with all of her kids and grandchildren living out there, she lived out there too sometimes, and she visited them. But, I mean, she came to visit her one daughter in Aberdeen in the winter, which seems a little crazy, but that's what she did.
She's radical. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much.
SDPB's project about the history of women's suffrage in South Dakota continues throughout 2020. We'll feature profiles of prominent suffragists and delve into the contentious politics between those in favor and those opposed, and keep on the lookout for that SDPB TV documentary. It's coming this summer, coming up in August here. It's called Simple Justice, Suffrage in South Dakota. SDPB partnered in the project with PBS and WGBH in Boston and their series, The Vote, which looks at the suffrage struggle on a national level.